Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
That's me.
And Mr. Chris Kinner.
That's me.
So I'm excited to have Chris here on the show because Chris is, he's been a friend of Justin and myself for quite some time. And
I've known you for
a little budding magician. And Chris is a very multi-talented guy. He does a lot of different things. He is TV producer, stage producer. He is a magician. He runs one of the most successful live entertainment brands ever. You know, the David Copperfield, executive producer, David Copperfield show. I remember Chris way before all back then, he put out a book called
Out of Control.
Chris Kinner's Out of Control. And what it was a book of magic, of different kinds of magic, cards and coins and close-up stuff. And the magic in it was fantastic. The magic in it was just like out of somewhere, you know, out of nowhere, this guy, this crazy great thinker, put together the stuff there. But the way the book was presented was really hilarious because it was, he had jokes in there, a lot of in jokes. He would, you know, the different descriptions of like the way you'd be looking at pictures and stuff, and they would change into.
Yeah.
It was like the Wicked Witch stuff.
It was kind of like if Mad Magazine meets a magic book.
Yeah. And
old Mad Magazine.
He made fun of, like, he did the Michael Amar. Do you remember the Elvis stamp?
Yeah.
He did like a version of the Michael Amar stamp, and it was like before and after, like with his hair and without hair.
Funny now because I don't have any hair.
Michael Amar is it was an amazing sort of thing to see. You could read this and you could see that this is a guy that has talents that go beyond just playing with a deck of cards. This is a guy that thought about a lot of different aspects.
And just to again give a primer to people who are not familiar with magic. You might think, oh, somebody does a magic book that's funny, that's cool, although, you know, there's a lot of things that are funny. In magic, that's not the case. There are like five actually funny people in the entire industry of magic. Like, you know, and we could probably name them right here on the show. Kenner is certainly one of them. And, you know, what has always been remarkable to me about your life, Chris, is that, you know, there have been so many turning points in magic since I have, followed it with iTrix. And you have always kind of found yourself sort of at the center of it with Out of Control. It was certainly, you know, in a boom for magic publishing with your role in Copperfield's organization to do magic as big as it has ever been done and have a longevity for which is so rarely, rarely seen, especially at the level that you guys are. And to partner, especially early on, with JB and Theory 11, and really kind of revolutionize the brand.
Founder of Theory 11. So one of the things that's amazing too about Out of Control is in there. I remember, I have my copy, and I remember somebody telling me, "Oh, you got to get this. There's this cut. There's this crazy cut." And it was this thing called Sybil, right? You know, named from, you know, it was a Sally Fields movie, yeah. The book, right? And it's this crazy thing where you take a deck of cards, half parts goes here, 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 and the next thing you know, it's like goes in all these different directions. And it was insane. It was this card flourish that nobody really talked about those things. No serious magician ever put those things into books, you know, to my recollection at that point. And out of nowhere comes this guy who's got really hardcore card chops, coin chops. He created an effect called three fly. If you watch a magician and he's got three coins in his hand, this guy invented that trick. He invented the trick that was the nucleus for that everybody else went from. Then he put this thing, this card thing called Sybil, which if you look up cardistry now, the term cardistry, everybody who does it now, who knows the history of it, they trace it back. They go, well, it started with Sybil. It started with this thing that he did.
Yeah, and 30
years ago. And he can do every single move those kids do today.
No, I can't. I wish I could. These kids are taking this stuff to a level beyond I could have possibly dreamed of. And there are 16-year-old kids that have skill that you cannot believe. You just look up cardistry online. It's unbelievable. And they are all so talented. I'm like,
really, it became so gigantic that it's really its own genre now. Like,
oh, yeah,
its own thing for sure. It's by far its own thing. And there's a couple of like key people in it, you know, and they're like, you know, there's Andre Gide, Dan and Dave. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a kid, Oliver Sarsgaard, in overseas in Europe. That's unbelievable. He's young, really young. I'm not sure how old he is, but he's 18, 19, 17. Ridiculous.
At the latest Academy of Magical Arts Award dinner, they did a fun presentation with the Buck Twins and then Steve Valentine, and they did this thing like the Devil Goes Down to Georgia, and they did this thing with card stuff. But they came out on stage and they said, it started with Sybil. It started this thing. And my point to getting to this point, okay, is not because I'm going to try to make you buy dinner.
He just bought lunch.
Yeah. A lot of us are out there, we're trying to do things. We're writers, we're comedians, we're podcasters, we're doing these creative sorts of things. We're trying to figure out what our thing is. We're trying to figure out what's the thing that we need to be doing. What is the plan that we're going to fit into in life? And if I looked at Out of Control, I'd go like, oh, well, this guy's going to be, you know, he's funny. He's going to be one of the top close-up magicians in the world, or he's going to be a guy who's going to be known in magic conventions, or he's going to keep writing books, or maybe he's going to go to Hollywood and write for sitcoms or something like that, or do something like that. You found a path and created a path for you that's incredible. When did you feel like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to be doing? Or have you got there yet?
I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. One thing that I do, and it's also similar to David, and my whole life, you know, David says this too, so it's kind of funny that we both kind of have a similar feeling, David Copperfield. I don't take no for an answer. A lot of people say, oh, you can't do that. That trick's too hard. You can't do that. That affects too big. There's no way you're going to be able to do that. That doesn't work. And you just prove people wrong and you do it. You just don't take no for an answer and you do it. When I started to work for David, I've worked for David for 25 years this year. And I think it's August 8th. Who's counting? And it's
6 p.m.
Right.
22. 6,
yeah. This is probably 11 p.m. So, you know, David is constantly told, no, you can't do this trick. You can't do this spec. You won't fit in the building. You won't fit in this. You won't be able to do this. It's going to cost too much money. It's going to do this. And when I started to work for David, I got that resistance from my friends even. You know, you're not going to be able to work for him. He's too difficult. Just work there for a few weeks. You do this, do that. And I just was like, I'm going to make my own path. And that's what I kind of do with everything. I make my own way. There's a road. I don't even know if there's a road. I'm building the road in front of me. You know, I'm just building it. And if I get to a clearing and I can go coast for a while before I have to build some more road, then that is what it is. But I know that's kind of metaphoric, but it is basically what I've done.
Well,
I've just gone straight, done what I want to do. I'm basically doing what I want to do. And I always have.
And I think that really has to be part of your spark for being in so many growth industries, like, you know, to have hit upon with Sybil, you know, the gigantic cardistry boom. With online retail, with Theory 11, what you guys have done with a Totally Out of Control, you know, you've happened to find yourself uniquely, especially in magic, to have not only one field for which you've been able to grow and expand a lot of these properties and make things far bigger than you started, but in multiple fields. You know, does it just go back to that one idea that, you know, whatever, we're just going to go ahead and do it and see where it goes?
No, I think it's, for me, it's always trying to progress. I always try to move forward. I very rarely go look backwards at my life. So I know so many people, creative people, and they'll have a great creative thought. These are guys, let's say I'll use magic as an example, a magician that's got these that are they're supposed to be super creative.
Yeah.
Everybody goes, this guy's so creative. And then you really look at what they've done. They did two or three things when they were younger, and then they didn't really do much after. And they really live off of that for the rest of their life. He's the guy that did this. He's the guy that did that. He's the guy that did this. And they never kind of push themselves past that point, because they could live off of that and be kind of famous in their own little world with that. And I give up on Three Fly. I give up on Sybil. I wanted to go to the next thing. It wasn't going to be like, look what I did. This was what I made. I'm that guy.
That was the thing, like, was there about Steve Jobs, is like, he didn't want to have like an Apple museum at Apple. He didn't want to have like, he didn't care like, oh, should we keep these companies? Like, no, he was always focused on the future. He wasn't a nostalgic guy.
Yeah, I'm not at all. And I don't keep things from my past. I go straight to the next thing. And I'm always worrying, trying to come up with the next thing that's good for me, that fits me. It's fun for me. It's got to be fun for me, too.
Well, you know, one of the things about you that we hear the legendary sort of stories about stuff, and then it kind of like, you sort of go like, man, what quality is this person that I don't know if I have? and you talk about not taking no, but it's the resourcefulness. And you had a great story about trying to find a ring.
Oh, yeah.
You're in.
Yeah, this David guy, and I can get things, get an object, get something from one place to another place, things that aren't sold anymore. I just have a knack for this kind of stuff. Well, we were in Oslo, Norway. Is that right? Oslo, Norway. And yeah. It was a holiday, and it was a Sunday, and everything was closed. Everything. And we're dark. We're going to open the show the next day. And David wanted these finger rings. We wanted very simple, not expensive, because we were just going to use it kind of like costume jewelry, because we're going to try them. We were going to destroy them. We needed like four or five of the same rings. So he said, I need them. I want to get them tonight. So he said it to us the night before. And I said, okay. And then I started asking, and I realized, holy cow, everything's closed right now. Everything's closed tomorrow. Everything's closed. Everything's closed. Everything's closed. So I started calling the promoter of the show, see if he knows anyone in a jewelry store, if anyone works in any kind of store that would have anything, you know, anything. We're asking everybody in town. I said, hey, I'm not sure I'm going to have these things. So I haven't found a resource. Everything's closed. It's a Sunday. It's a holiday. And this is back in like the 90s. So it wasn't like nowadays. Europe is much more westernized and you can get anything anytime, pretty much.
Yeah.
So David looks at me and just says, without even thinking, it's like in the next, as I finish, I'm having a hard time. He says, have you gone to the airport, to the terminal for what's it when you buy international, what's it called? When you fly international, there's the one area that you can buy duty free. Yeah. Because if you go into the duty free area at the airport, because any international airport's got a duty free area. So I'm like, and I just, this is prior to 9/11, so you can still get into the airports and just walk around. So I'm like, I can't believe I didn't think of that. Holy cow. No, I didn't. And of course I went there, and that's where we got them, because we could find them. Blew my mind that day, because I thought, just when I thought, it's one of those times when you think you're smart or you think you know how to do something, you think you're good at something, and then you kind of exhaust your resources, exhaust your ideas, and then someone just goes, oh, just try that. And it's the very first thing off the top of their head. It's pretty humbling. And I remember that story very well. And it, you know, I always think of that story when I can't find something, or I need to do something, or I need to get something done. Because no way do I want to go to David Copperfield and say, I can't do that.
Well, you,
unless I know for sure, or I have a very good reason for it.
And you just related it out, you know, now how that affects you, like trying to get a microphone cable.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm going to get it.
Can you tell them a story? I mean, that just,
not really.
Okay.
I don't really want to tell this one.
No worries. Sorry. All right. But
that is an amazing, trait though, and it is something that I see with my most successful friends, and I try to emulate, is it creativity is so often, I think, clearing the dead wood, like from your consciousness. And for, like, you know, David came up with that idea for the duty free shop because in his head he hadn't been racking his brain about, oh, where do I find finger rings? Should I call somebody local? Should I try to see if I can find the owner of a shop so they
I gave him the list of the things I had done. Right.
Yeah. And well, so being able to clear it and say, okay, all these dead ends that I'm hitting are in part because I've walked down these paths. I made conscious decisions to say, I'm going to try to solve these things this way. And if you are free of that context, so often you can just have, okay, let me think of this whole nother way to solve it. And the most successful people I know are people who are able to do it themselves, who are able to kind of clear the deck and say, okay, how about we look at it this way? How about we stop thinking about it in a way that has given context to this problem before?
Well, both you, Justin, and Chris have both solved similar problems where you've gone to, like, go to Twitter and say, anybody in this town can do this or whatever. Like you do with the Go game and needing actors and people like that.
Yeah, I do that all the time. If I need to get something, I'll go to Twitter and ask.
Yeah, and it's a tremendous resource, you know. And
people answer, and it's unbelievable. Twitter is unbelievable. Actually, so Facebook's kind of like that, but Twitter is really powerful.
And that's for everybody out there, is to think about this. You think about your resources, and they, resources aren't necessarily what, you know, money you have, but it can be people you know or networks that you are. What networks are you part of that you can then ask? Because there are going to be people who want to help you solve your problem. There very often will. And you may not have an answer, but if you can put it out there and say, how do I do X? Somebody, you know, one out of 10 people, one person sitting around bored and might go, man, I want to figure out how to do this. And I will help you with that. And so learn to use those things. And there's, you're going to be very, very close resources, your friends you go to. And I do that all the time. I go to people like, here's, I'm at a dead end. How do I do this? And then people will reframe it. Sometimes you need to think bigger, you know, think bigger about it. Might say, well, if money is no object, how would I do it? And like, well, now that I know, then you might have an answer, but then you say, you know what? What if now that I know there's that option, how do I do it without the money? How do I make that happen? And think bigger, think differently, and then just ask people. I mean, don't ask people to do everything for you, but.
Oh, no. I mean,
it's always good to know your limitations and to what you need to ask for. Yeah. I think that's a problem that a lot of creative people have is that they think that they have to do it themselves. And at some point you go, I'm not really sure. Let's say you're not technical. You don't know computers or you don't know whatever it is. It's not a problem to ask someone to help you make something or help you get something done. Mm-hmm. It's not against the rules. You don't have to do it every single thing yourself.
So about this dinosaur thing.
Yeah.
I think we can get this thing back.
I think we can get it funded.
Yeah.
David is pretty.
But you know, and just to add on to that final point, I've always wanted to ask people as many questions as possible, you know, and there's such a tremendous perspective to kind of understanding that like your brain can only produce so many solutions, and your brain gets better every time you understand how other people solve problems, that it's always one of those things that like, even if I think I have a good idea, if I think I have a solution, I want to ask somebody else about how they would want to do it. And yeah, I think I've told this to, I don't know if I've told it on Weird Things before, but my buddy Nick Gerwich, who used to work at the same newspaper together, who wrote then and writes now the Perry Bible Fellowship, is one of the most creative and amazing artists and people that I've ever met. He used to do edit art for the newspaper, and he was great. I mean, this guy is, you know, one of the, you know, an amazing comedic mind and a great artist. And he would show me the edit art and he would say like, hey, what do you think? And I would say, oh, that's cool. Or he'd say, hey, I got this idea. I'm halfway through. What do you think should happen after that? And I would give him an idea and I'd say, oh, okay, I think it'd be funny if this guy did this or you had this show up there. And he would always say like, uh-huh. Oh, wow. That's good. That's really good. And then would never take my advice ever. Right. He would always, but like, it would always be different than what he initially said he wanted to do. And yet never what I had suggested. And I think beyond just, you know, him thinking that my ideas were dumb, that part of it was his process of wanting to go to people and understand where they thought it should go. So he could get a better idea on, you know, bringing the joke forward or bringing the point forward and making it clearer and more understandable. And that's something that I've always taken with me, that, you know, you can always use more perspective, even if you think you know for sure what you're going to do is the right thing.
Well, it's not about, sometimes I think with the creative process and doing something that's creative and trying to break, you know, ground, you have to follow what you feel no matter what. And again, I'll bring David up in this. David, we're in the middle of a trick right now, an illusion that requires something that we're fighting with. Sometimes the audience doesn't like it. Sometimes the audience loves it. It's a really a polar thing. It's a love and hate kind of thing.
It's called killing a puppy.
Yes, no. And David really is fighting for a part of it to stay in, and he wants to make it work. So there's something to be said for taking your idea that you love, like, oh, I really want this. I really want this to work. I really want this to work, and just doing it. You know, you look at the fashion industry. Man, those guys are crazy, and they're bold, and they try things, and when it hits, it hits. When it doesn't, it kind of sometimes just goes away into the noise. So it's the noise. They don't care about the noise. They don't mind making 20 mistakes and then have one giant hit. That's what puts them on the, you know, that's what makes them really different, makes them creative. So it's stick with your idea sometimes too. You know, don't.
I'm a believer, like, when you ask for advice, listen to advice. And when you encounter bad advice, at least think about it, understand where it came from. And don't just, because sometimes the best things are the things we don't do. We think is bad advice. And then you go back and you go, oh man, no, this is what they meant.
Yeah.
Well, so smart. Here's the thing about bad advice. You need to, if you're going to dismiss bad advice, you better be able to understand exactly why it's bad and exactly where you can think of like why that didn't work. You know, like I feel like if you don't have context to it, if you're just dismissing it out of hand for whatever reason, that's where you get yourself in trouble. Like bad
advice. Here's a bad advice thing. Let me just, I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is a bad advice thing that we get as in getting advice from people and responses from audience members of the show. Sometimes you will have a strong opinion that something is correct and you really strong opinion about it. And then the audience might say more times than you want the same exact, we'll call it bad advice, because you know in your heart you couldn't do it that way. If you did it that way, it wouldn't work. And we've tried it that way and it hasn't worked. But you keep getting that advice. So you have to sometimes, it's not telling you that to do it their way, like it's the bad advice, but that your way might still not be perfect.
Yeah.
So it's the fact that they want to give you such a strong opinion tells you something. That's really what I'm trying to say.
That something's wrong.
You right. Know, it doesn't necessarily mean they're correct or that you're correct. It's just something is a foot.
Well, you guys have a very interesting process too in how you work on stuff.
Yeah, we're different than most.
Can you talk about that or?
Well, it's all different. Depends on like, what do you mean? Like you like, kind of know.
Asking audiences.
Oh yeah. Say. We ask audience members. We always ask people. We will test a trick prior to putting it in the show. Like myself will go out so David can watch it. And let's say that we have a trick that's new and it's a speaking trick with an effect in it. And it's not something that it's not where somebody comes out and produces a car. It's a, you know, kind of a more cerebral trick. I may learn the trick and go out and perform it for a small group of people after a show. We'd pull back 100 audience members. I'd do the trick so David can watch it.
Yeah.
And I would basically try to learn it almost for a script, word for word. And then one of the theories is if I can get it to work, it shouldn't be any problem for David to get it to work. Because if they're going to sit and listen to me for 5 minutes or 8 minutes, they'll definitely listen to David Copperfield for 5 or 8 minutes. So, you know, we kind of can hash out lines and things with it. And then we throw David in and he tries it and he does it and he sees what works and what doesn't work. And that's an interesting process. But to get to that point, you know, you have to have a lot of confidence in. We do a lot of things that are definitely not normal.
We talk, you know, a theme on this podcast is you want to have a process to become better. You want to have a process to make things better. And a lot of times people put things out in the world like, wrote a book. I made a movie. I wrote a song. I did this. Or I do a podcast. Like, great.
I'm always working.
But what is your process to get better? How do you, you know, sometimes it's not just keep doing it. How do you analyze? How do you do that? And that's what I love about what you guys do is that nobody does that. And that's why it's the most successful. He's the most successful magician in history because you guys take the time to say, no, let's test this in front of audiences and let's see how people react to this. And then we'll decide what we need to tweak or how to adjust and not just put it on stage right away and then go,
I have a problem with people that say, oh, we do classic magic tricks. Do the classic trick of such and such. You know, and I look at it like this. Let's say that John Smith creates the Miracle Magic Book Trick. And it's a classic trick that all magicians do, the Miracle Magic Book Trick. And then no one changes it. No one does anything. But it feels outdated, probably because if John Smith, who was so smart and created the trick at the beginning, were alive today, he would have altered it to fit today. It was created in 1950 to fit 1950 and 1950s audiences. So you have to kind of really look at things when you try to do a classic thing or something that's been done before. You have to it's a different world. It's a totally different animal right now.
Well, and what I think your process demonstrates just a craft that is, I think, common amongst the most successful creative people that we've seen in pop culture and is uncommon in magic, quite frankly. You know, there's a lot.
It's pretty easy to be creative in magic, yes.
Just in terms of the craft stuff, in terms of working on it, in terms of being creative, in terms of putting out new and original ideas and never being satisfied, to kind of just sit on something. I mean, there is, you know, the Copperfield show is unique because there is a level of fame that David has that theoretically you could just do, you know, scale appropriate approximations of the biggest things that people remember on television. And that show would run for a very healthy time for Vegas and around the world, you know, because people will just remember that those things worked for a reason, and that could just be it. But you guys don't stop there because there is a commitment.
We go forward.
Yeah. And only in Magic, that's not so off. You know, a lot of times, like you said, it's the one thing that happened when, you know, at a very young age, that you're just going to ride that horse until the legs fall off.
There's the picture for it. Gentlemen, I think this has been a good after things.
Yeah, good times.
Thank you, Mr. Kinner, for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Young.
All I know is we're going to make dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've learned that today. Actually, that's all I hear about from Andrew. That's all he talks about. It's been a while. It's funny is now that Jurassic World is out, I'm realizing just how much he actually talks about dinosaurs, not just because of this movie. It's coming back to me. All these times are flashing in my head. Since you were a kid, you've been talking about dinosaurs. So
I have a dream, guys.
Yeah. I feel a little short in this. I'm not really that short.
I think Andrew just knows how to do webcam posture.
Oh, yeah. He's like, hey, how's it going, guys?
It's been
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.